Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to live your life by design in 2009? Well, then sit back, relax, and enjoy an empowering conversation to advance and enhance your life. And now, your host, Miss Kathy Holloway Hill and Mr. Tony Lamont.
Good evening, listeners. This is Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we want to wish everyone listening a happy Thanksgiving. We hope you are safe. If you are on the road listening from your phone or if you're in the chat room, we hope you are going to have a safe, blessed, prosperous Thanksgiving holiday with your family, and we hope you enjoy it. And we are just really rolling with our Review, Renew, and Reclaim Your Life series. We are in week 11, and yet again, we have two very powerful guests that we're going to be talking to this evening, and I am very excited to be able to talk to Mr. David Cooper first, and then we have Marilyn Suttle and Lori Jo Vest coming on later in the show. So, really excited about that, Tony. This is just really going very well and receiving a lot of emails about it, and it's just a very positive experience. So everybody is really looking forward to the grand finale on December the 10th, and so am I.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that you want to always, and I guess we need to really keep encouraging everyone, is that the services that are being provided by these folks are some amazing services, and They're giving folks an opportunity to get it in a way that they wouldn't be able to get it. And so
for them to partner and
come together like this, I think it's a wonderful thing, because a lot of times you don't get an opportunity to get this kind of these kind of services all in one package, or these kinds of individuals who come together and say, hey, we want to be a part of this. So I think it's a great opportunity for folks to take advantage of it. As a matter of fact, I had an opportunity to take advantage of one of the services that were made available to me, and it was remarkable. And I just want to encourage anyone, if there is something that you feel like that you could be a part of, and a service that's a part of this program, please take advantage of it, because you never know how it's going to benefit you or others. So, and now it's the holiday season. I have to also say this: maybe you hear something that would be a wonderful gift for someone, so you may want to go ahead and, you know, get the book and get the services, and it'll just be an opportunity. It's a great package.
Yeah, it's going to be a win-win for so many people, because, like I said, I've already received tons of emails about, you know, the date and, you know, can they get it now and can they get the free gifts now. And so my partners are going to be blown away with the amount of attention and the amount of people that are going to be coming to their website and seeking their services. So it's going to be fabulous. So I'm really ready to rock and roll. So, Tony, do you have big Thanksgiving plans?
Well, it's been Thanksgiving with family, and so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, good. That's good. That's great. Well, I'm glad, because I know you
How
are
about
very
yourself?
Busy. Well, yes, I actually have plans myself with family and my significant other, so I'm very excited about that, you know, because I work a lot, and so does my significant other, so I'm really excited to be able to spend that time, just kick back, relax, and have a good time, so looking forward to it. Yep. So we're going to move on with the show, and looks like my first guest is here, and I am going to introduce Mr. David Cooper. He has 20 years' experience developing people's talents and coaching executives and managers in transition. Well, that's a very important piece. His career success from – he actually started in Tokyo, which is extremely interesting. And so he started in Tokyo, and then he moved to supporting producers in Hollywood. So that's a very, very interesting career path he's had there. So I'm going to go ahead and bring David Cooper on the line. David, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you for inviting me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, do I detect an accent?
You could too, yeah. I'm from England originally, but I've been in the States for 15 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay, all right. Yeah, because I could actually... Now, I like your bio says you are a transition coach. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that entails?
So I work with people who either are looking for a new job or more often are looking for a new career. So I help them explore what their options are and often get to their dream job. So that's what I mean by transition.
That's a very important piece, David. You know, I just happened to be talking to a colleague of mine today about how that particular coaching area or those types of skills are missing from our schools. They're also missing from a lot of organizations because in these days and times, we're in a very, very difficult economic time right now, and jobs are being lost, and people are in transition, and they don't know where to go because a lot of clients are coming to me. They don't have a clue what to do next. So I would imagine you are in high demand right now.
It's getting busy, yeah, that's for sure. And I love to help people kind of work through what their passion is and where they can transition to. So that really is a blessing for me.
Yes, absolutely. It also says here that you are an accomplished writer, and you've written quite a few books.
Yeah, I guess people have been talking to you. I've written 7 books, and I have another book coming out next year, actually, in 2010. So I just signed the contract for that, so that's pretty exciting.
Okay, all right. Great. And your books are about this topic, or...?
The book which is coming out next year is actually about how you can go from being an outsider to an insider at work. So it's how you can be a successful outsider. And the other books are, some are actually fiction and some are actually nonfiction about management, development, interpersonal skills. So
okay.
I've written a number of different things.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, I am noticing, because like I said, I had a conversation with a colleague earlier this week, and we talked about how a lot of the colleges and universities, they focus their curriculum around whatever your field of study is. You know, if you're in technology, they focus the curriculum around your technical classes. If you're in sales, they focus the curriculum around sales classes and so forth and so on. But they don't teach students how to have life skills.
Right.
Like what you're saying, transition. You know,
mm-hmm.
Once they graduate from college, they teach them how to be productive in a job and how to perform in a job. But what about that in-between piece, once you graduate from college to the time you actually land the job? What about that portion? I mean, nobody really teaches that.
Right. Actually, I'm working with a couple of universities in California at the moment, actually to work on that particular subject, so it's interesting you mention it. A lot of students have problems getting an internship, how they can convert the internship to actually a job, how they can network, how they can turn the networking into contacts which could actually offer them a job. A lot of the young students right now are really struggling with that, and it's sad because there's just some basic things you can do which enable you to be successful in that area. So I'm talking to a couple of universities with graduate and undergraduates, helping them with those career choices.
I was talking to a young lady this week. She's not a client of mine, but, you know, she was, you know, just saying that she had recently graduated, and she actually started to become depressed.
Uh-huh.
Because she had graduated, and you know, she performed very well in school, and her GPA was very high, but you know, she's not finding a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to her, I said, well, you know, we're in a tough economic. She said, well, I understand that, but you know, I'm not getting anywhere. I mean, and I guess school didn't prepare her for the tough economic times. I mean, college students don't really pay much attention to that, I guess. But
I've heard that some students going back to school or, you know, taking another degree just because they can't face actually finding a job right now. I'm not sure whether that's the right solution, but that's what I'm hearing some people are doing. Because it's, I think you're exactly right that the colleges are not preparing them in the way that they need to be prepared. So maybe they work on a resume, but how do you get the resume into the right person's hands? That's the key.
Right. Right. And then once you get the resume into the right person's hands, what do you do next? How do
exactly.
you follow up?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
What's the proper method of following up? So, it's a process.
I wanted to ask you if the process of making that transition from where you were to where you will go next. I know one of the challenges that a lot of, particularly folks that have worked in an industry for a significant amount of time, they aren't able to recognize those skills that they've learned in a specific field. Is that what you help them do? Is to recognize those things that are transferable to other areas, transferable to other jobs, or how does that process start? Because I know a lot of folks that are in industries and the industries are changing or whatever, and they need to change, whether it's training or things like that. How does that process start? How do you get folks started in that process?
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that's one of the things that I think is crucial when I'm working with clients, to look at their resume and get out of the industry that I was in one industry, so I can't be in another industry. And then also sometimes even getting out of, you know, I did this particular job, I need to find that job, and then get back to, well, what are the skills you had in that job? So I'm actually working with a film and TV editor right now, and she has great skills in that, but she's also done other things, like she knows how to manage budgets, she knows how to work to a schedule, she knows what customer service is about, because if you're working in TV and you're editing, you have to know how to please your client. So she has those other skills. So now it's a question of looking at what she's done and reinterpreting it in a different way for a different audience. So it's a good process to go through and get out of the mindset that I've been in this one industry, I can't do anything else. If you've been a manager in one industry, you can be a manager in another industry, because you have some core skills that transfer very easily.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's a very good question, Tony, because, you know, that is a that's a process. And I mean, that's a specific art or a science or whichever, to learn how to leverage those skills and know how to, you know, use those to your advantage to approach another organization that might be a different industry, but there are certain skills that are transferable throughout a lot of industries, you know, leadership and communication and, you know, those types of soft skills, competency skills is what I call them.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Kathy. I find that. And what can also happen is that I work a lot with people in the entertainment industry, and they have those skills, but they also have a kind of a different twist on them, which is very appealing to other companies. So Mattel, the toy company, is in California, and I've done work with them. And they are often very interested in people in the entertainment business, because they can bring a flair and a flourish, which is a little different. And you know, transferring those skills over is much easier if you can identify what they are and then see how your unique spin on them might appeal to somebody outside your industry.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that kind of brings up another question for me, David. If you are, let's say, as Tony stated, you have 15 years or 20 years experience in the technology industry,
mm-hmm.
and all of your skills are around technical tasks, and you have a few good transferable skills that can be moved to a different industry.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get that new industry, not the technology industry, because you've been there your whole life, how do you move? Let's say you want to go to the advertising industry, or, you know, something that is totally the finance industry, or something that's totally unrelated to technology. How do you approach someone in that new industry and explain to them, you know, just for our listeners, how can they go to a different industry and explain to them, I have transferable skills and give me a chance, even though I don't have sales and advertising experience, but how can I, you know, have a chance to learn this and do this?
Well, I think it's probably two things. One is that you need to network and build relationships so that the person can see who you are as a person, what your core qualities are, what you believe in, and then they can take a chance on you. If they don't know you, if they can't trust you, then they're less willing to take a chance on you. And I think if you can build those relationships through work you do for a not-for-profit, friends in your church or your synagogue, different ways of making those contacts into the different industries, and people know you as a person, then they're much more willing to listen to why your skills might be transferable. And then I think the second thing is that you need to be able to believe in that possibility. A lot of people I work with have kind of limiting beliefs. They read things in the newspapers and listen to things on in the media and think it's impossible to actually move. And I know it's not. I have people who move from one area to another. Now, you might not be able to move and have the same salary and perks and benefits. That's possible, but it's definitely a possibility to move from one industry to another using your core skills and based on who you are as a person with a good networking experience and building those relationships. It's really exciting for my clients when that happens. I love it.
You know, I think you have touched on two extremely valuable pieces of advice there, as far especially the building the relationship portion of it, because there are so many networking sites that people can join for free.
Sure.
And organizations that you can join, whether it's live in your city. I think there's a website called meetup.com, and you can plug in your zip code wherever you live, and you can meet people. I think you could put in a topic.
Wow.
And you can plug in the topic of your interest, and you can meet people right there in your city that have, you know, the similar goals and like-minded people that you need to be networking with in a particular circle. So that is a very, very valuable piece of advice. So for everyone who's listening, I definitely would encourage you to do that, because that's true. When you are trying to cross a different industry and you have those transferable skills, you must build that relationship so that those individuals can see that you're able to, you're multitasking, you know, you can do more than just one type of industry job. So
right, yeah, you're exactly right. And building on what you said, like, for example, LinkedIn or Plaxo, those sites, I've gained new clients from that. I've interacted with people I haven't interacted for 25 years, and they're just incredibly valuable. And you can really build deep relationships through some of those sites.
That's so true. I am a perfect example, because people ask me all the time. I spent 28 years in the technology industry, very technical job. I worked for IBM, I mean, one of the global giants of technology. And for me to come step out of corporate America, because I walked away from that career, which was very difficult, but to walk away from that and then turn around and become a life coach, people say to me all the time, now, wait a minute, that's right-brained and left-brained. How can you do that, or why are you doing that? Well, my story is a little bit different, and I won't go into the whole minutia of it, but I was kind of pushed down a path that I really didn't want to go down, but, you know, I was good in math, and, you know, just because you're good in a certain subject doesn't mean it's your passion. So, but I was allowed, you know, I just allowed my parents to push me down that path, and so I got stuck in there like most people do. You get stuck because of the money. The money's great, but it just wasn't maximizing my potential as far as I'm concerned, because I feel like I am so much better at what I'm doing right now, because I love it, for one.
Yeah, it sounds like that was an interesting journey you went through.
It was. It was a very interesting journey, and the passion has to be there. I mean, even though I stayed in that industry for 28 years, and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of us fall into that mindset and that trap and comfort zone, loving money, and the money keeps you stuck. But I had gotten to the point where I really wanted to do what I love to do, and that outweighed the money. So, you know, I stepped away from it, and it has just been a wonderful journey ever since. And I'm just loving where I am now. And you're having the opportunity to do this and have this It's a fabulous campaign and meet brilliant individuals like yourself. It's just been magnificent, and I've learned so much.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask. Are you finding now more than ever, or are your clients coming out of necessity? Are you finding a lot of folks making those changes out of necessity or desire? Because as I mentioned before, a lot of folks, because of the circumstances that they're in, the way the economy has affected so many folks and things like that, they're being forced to make changes, and some are willing, some aren't. Are you finding, folks are saying, you know what, this is my opportunity. I've always wanted to do this. Like Kathy, I've always wanted to do this. This is a great opportunity for me to step away and really do this. Nobody's forcing me to do it. It's my choice, and I want to do this. Or is it pretty much a balance in, from your clientele? And whatever the case, which one is easier to work with? The ones that, the folks that have made the choice, I really want to do this, or the folks that are doing it out of necessity?
I guess it's an interesting question. I guess I have a lot of people who, out of necessity, are looking to change. They're in an industry which is just not working right now, and so they're looking to change for that reason. But then I think I probably have more people who they really, it's their desire. They circumstances maybe they've got laid off, but now they see it as a real opportunity to do something different. So one of my most successful clients, that was her story, that she basically was the end of the road with her particular career, and we just worked on, well, what would your dream job look like? And it was the first time she'd actually stopped and thought, well, what would I really like to do in a job, rather than somebody offers me this, or my parents say this is a good thing for me to do, or everybody says I'm good at this, so I should do it. It was the first time she'd actually stopped and looked, and she's ended up with a career where she travels a lot. She works a lot with really interesting people. She doesn't do the stuff that she hated in her old job. And she's also making more money. So it really worked out well. And that was really from her desire. It wasn't a necessity. The necessity would have led her to doing the same kind of work. She could have got another job doing the same thing. But she really wanted to stop and look and, well, what do I really want from my life? So I guess I like both types of clients, but the ones who are really working from the desire, you can have these amazing transformations, and that can be pretty exciting. So that's cool. That's very cool.
Great.
Yeah, that is great. And a lot of times you kind of have to help people along the path of knowing what it is they want to transition into.
Sure.
They may not have an idea. I know a lot of my clients, when I ask them what are their passions and what are they passionate about, they don't know.
Right.
So you have to kind of help them along and ask them, well, what are your hobbies, or what are some of the things that you just do for fun?
Mm-hmm. An interesting question I use is, what did you do as a kid? What did you like doing as a kid? What did you want to be as a kid? And I have a 3-year-old, so I get a lot of experience of kids at the moment, and they're very focused on what they like doing. And sometimes taking somebody back to that point is very interesting. I used to love to draw. I had a woman who was an engineer who actually moved into being an architect because that's what she liked to do as a kid. She liked to draw. She liked to draw pictures of houses. And so that was really her passion once she got in touch with, her core values and what was going on back then. She could see what her future was.
And in my opinion about that is, I know a lot of times, you're right, when we're children, we don't know all the ins and outs and all the money needs and people need to get the bills paid and all. We don't know those things. All we know is what we love and what we like.
Yep, exactly.
And what happens when we become adults is people try to, they get away from selecting what they like, and they select what pays well.
Yeah.
But what they don't understand is, if you apply your passion to your job, if you can mix the two, whatever you're passionate about, that's what you need to go toward, the money will come. The money will come.
Exactly. And that can be very frightening for some people, because I work with an artist, and the messages she'd received from her parents were, you know, you need to get a good job, you need to get a pension. So it was very scary for her to think, well, I'm going to go out of this job with regular money. But as we talked through it, there were ways that she could be fine financially, and she could be happy and really follow her passion. But it was breaking through that fear was a little difficult initially. We really had to kind of work together in partnership, help her through that to get past those old messages that she'd had from her, you know, family. And they were saying it for good reasons. They weren't, you know, they wanted her to be safe and secure, and that's what parents should do. But she was ready to kind of break through that.
Right. And you mentioned beliefs earlier, and that is a huge part of it because, as we stated, children are just, you know, they're innocent and, you know, they're not tarnished by someone else's beliefs. But once other people's beliefs are placed on us, because that's what happens when we're children and we adopt other people's beliefs, they create them for us. And then once they push their beliefs off onto us, then now we've got this idea, just like me. I wouldn't have selected technology, but my parents selected it. So they pushed their beliefs off on me. And that's why it's so important for us, once we become adults, to reassess our beliefs, reassess those core values, reassess our passions, reassess who we are as individuals, not who our parents are, but who we are.
No, that's exactly right. That's a great message. And I mean, I think if there's one thing people could take from the conversation, that's it. Really look at what's your vision, what do you want? And I think if you do that, then everything else falls into place. You know, if you're trying to make other people happy, it may work out for a while, but in the end, it doesn't. That's kind of my belief. That's what I've seen so often.
And that's what I've lived. That's what I've lived. And even though, I mean, I could have walked away from corporate America and, you know, deciding to live my purpose and go ahead and do what I've always wanted to do. And I could have left corporate America very bitter toward whoever, the world, my parents, my spouse, for keeping me there. But I didn't. I didn't want to be a bitter person. I wanted to be a better person. 28 years is a long time to take from my life. However, I was able to gained a tremendous amount of human capital and a tremendous amount of transferable skills that I can now use in my own business as an entrepreneur.
Sure. And it must be great for your clients who, if they come from that industry, that business, because you understand what they're going through, you understand their world, and that must be really a remarkable gift for them that they have someone who knows what they're going through. So
absolutely.
The journey was important for them, too.
That's exactly right, David. That is so true. And we're coming down on our last couple of minutes, so I want to make sure that we get your contact information for whoever may be listening. If you want to sign up for David's newsletter, what is your website? I want to plug it in the chat room.
Okay. DavidCooperCoach.com, and it's C-O-U-P-E-R. So it's DavidCooperCoach.com. And Cooper is spelled C-O-U-P-E-R from Scotland.
David, I am so thrilled to have you on my team. I'm so glad you were able to join us this evening. You have been a wealth of knowledge. Thank you ever so kindly. And I know these listeners are chomping at the bit for this December 10th date. So just stay tuned because we're gonna have a great time with this.
Yeah, well, good luck, and thank you for inviting me on, and have a good Thanksgiving.
I will.
You
do the same, and make sure it's safe.
Certainly, I will.
All righty.
Okay, take care. Thank you very much.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Tony, I absolutely love what he had to say. I mean, the transition coach. I mean, I think that's the first time that I've ever heard of a transition coach, and that's something that is so very important, especially now in today's times with this economy and people getting laid off and having to switch industries and stuff. So he's very necessary. That's one reason I was very happy he agreed to join my campaign.
I mean, when you as you said, when you think about it, and we forget about this, but folks that have been in corporate America and folks that have been around business for a long time, we don't realize
that the industrial age has changed. It's now in the technological age. For so many years in the industrial age, you were expected to start a career working in manufacturing or something like that and retiring from those plants or those factories. Well, that's changed now. And because that's changed, individuals are now having to have different kinds of mindsets. And those mindsets have to be, I'm going to have maybe three or four careers in my working lifetime. And that transition from one thing to the other a lot of times is related, but sometimes isn't. You just have to be able to recognize the skills that you've taken from one place to the other and make them beneficial for yourself.
And I would also like to encourage everyone who's listening, I really would like for you to embrace and adopt the idea of multiple streams of income. Because when we talk about transitioning, whether you're in corporate America and you're comfortable in the job you're currently in right now or not, that's fine. I'm happy for you. But I still think, regardless of where you are in your career, multiple streams of income is extremely critical. You never know when that job is going to go away. As long as you're working for someone else, you never know when that job is going to go away. And even if you are fortunate enough to retire from that company, you still can have multiple streams of income where, because you don't want to depend on the government and you may have no idea what your pension may be once you retire. So multiple streams of income is always a good idea, and it's a good creative way to have residual income, income that's coming in even when you're not doing anything, when you're asleep, different things that you love to do that you can turn into creative ways to bring money in. I just think it's something that we really need to focus on more in this country, and I'm a big advocate for that right now, and I'm really pushing that a lot in my campaign. I have some experts that are really good at helping people to understand more about that and creative ways to get that done. So I just wanted to get that message out there. Okay, so moving on to our next two guests that I'm extremely excited to bring on, Marilyn Suttle and Lori Jo Vess. They are the authors of this best-selling blockbuster book, Who is Your Gladys? I love that title. I absolutely love that title. And I'm going to go ahead and bring both these beautiful ladies on the line. Marilyn and Lori Jo, are you both there?
I'm here, thanks. Hi.
Hi, this is Lori. I'm here. I'm on too.
Excellent, excellent. I love that book title.
It's fun.
It's got entertainment value.
I know, absolutely, absolutely. And you ladies have had a lot of success with it.
We've been blown away by the response that we've been getting. It seems to go viral and just be everywhere all at once. And it's been so exciting to get the reviews and hear about. We're getting emails pretty regularly about companies that are buying one for 100 people or the whole company. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's an
nice
excellent product. It's a great product. It is a fabulous product. I know one of the things that I talk about a lot is that corporations are so busy focusing and bringing consultants in and focusing on their bottom line and focusing on their profit and loss and just focusing on their profit, period, that they forget about the things that really, 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 really make a difference for the company, and that's their employees, one, and their customers, two.
Exactly,
so,
and the CEOs that we interview in
areas
our book
are very
know
important.
It. Yeah, they know that. So we interviewed 10 different companies and their executives and frontline staff, and they know what's important, and they know that customer service translates directly into sales, repeat business.
Right. That's exactly right. So for our listeners, ladies, for our listeners who, you know, may not have heard about your fantastic book, just tell our listeners a little bit about what the title is, Who is Your Gladys? So tell our listeners a little bit about what the book's about and also how you came up with that title. Because I already know, but I want you to explain it to them. I think it's fabulous.
Okay. Well, I'll start and then, Lori, you'll jump in. Who is Your Gladys is we all have one. It's that person that, you want to run screaming from the room rather than deal with this person. But what we've discovered by interviewing 10 amazing companies, big companies that have won awards top of their class, you know, really truly brilliant at what they do, is that they learn to embrace their Gladys, understand them, and turn around the tough ones so that they become just as vocal and obnoxious recommending you to other people as opposed to opposing you. Lori, give us a little more.
Well, if you can, the thing is, so many people don't know how to deal with difficult customers, and it's one of the things that scares a lot of people in business is how do you deal with that crabby customer? And so what we've done is find people who are doing it and doing it really well, and it translates directly into sales. It brings customers coming back and brings in a lot of referral business. And it's funny how learning to deal with the most difficult customer helps you deal with all of your customers. So it translates all the way across every customer and even your coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to make sure for everyone who's listening, Gladys represents that crabby customer. So when the book title asks, who is your Gladys, they're asking you, who is your crabby customer?
Exactly. And we all have different ones that push our buttons. So for you, it might be that really cold, aloof person. For me, it's the one who's demanding and in my face. For Lori, it might be, you know, somebody who's a little sneaky and shifty. You know, we have just different styles that just trigger us differently.
Yeah, it might be that aggressive person that just thinks that, you know, when you ask, may I put you on hold? And they say, no, I don't want to be placed on hold. You know, it could be a lot of different things. And you know, when it comes to customer service, because I've been in management leadership positions and my entire career when I was in corporate America, and they come in all different styles and flavors and colors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they do. And we all can be those Gladys's too. I don't know about you, but
yes.
When I go to the store and I'm in a bad mood or I want something and they don't have it, I become a Gladys.
You know, the thing I love about Gladys, though,
good,
is
you could admit that.
She's willing to complain. And right now there's a recent research study that came out that says 74% will leave your business, never come back, not buy from you because they perceive poor service. Well, if they're not going to tell you about it, how can you change it? So when you get one that will complain, oh, are we lucky? I mean, it's something to celebrate and be glad about, even though it doesn't feel good when you're receiving it.
And, you know, another point I want to make to everyone who's listening, and, you know, I'm just, for whatever reason, I just seem to be giving out advice tonight, but I understand the importance of customer service only because, like I said, I was in the technology industry, and one of the areas that we had was a help desk. So, you know, we had to deal with a lot of people that were calling in to the call center and the help desk. So I'm going to ask everyone, when you receive superior customer service, whether it's from a call center or a waitress or whatever, if you receive outstanding service, please tell that person.
That's great.
And that's so important.
Please give them their kudos. I do that all the time. If I'm waiting in a drive-through line for food, although I don't eat fast food, but, you know, even if I stop for coffee or whatever, if I'm in the drive-through line and the drive-through line goes quick and fast and they're just reeling them through there, as soon as I get up to the window, that's the first thing I tell them.
Well,
you guys are doing a great job.
You're giving reverse customer service, which really brings about better service for you in the future, too, because you get what you focus on.
And for other people. For other people. I mean, even though everybody's not saying it, even though that one person said it, it's still going to make them give that person behind me great customer service.
I love it.
Yeah. And isn't it just nice to give somebody a little boost?
Yes.
Yep. It is. It is.
It's all about the law of attraction because it's going to come back to you. I mean, and if you're going to be a crabby person, you know, what that crabby person is giving out to you is exactly what they feel on the inside. I mean, the person, they probably don't love themselves. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to that, too. They're just miserable about everything.
Well, and sometimes they're sick and you just don't know that they're not feeling well. Or maybe they just got terrible news that somebody else in the family's ill and so they're suffering inside. And so they're coming across so rough and gruff and, if you only knew, I mean, there are times where if you knew, your heart would open up and you could be great with them. So knowing that the possibility is there, having an open attitude and just acceptance and not taking it personally, I think that helps the most. Have you found that to
right.
be true, too?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I am.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I was actually going to ask you, you know, you just actually gave one, but I was going to ask you, can you give our listeners a few tips for dealing with the Gladyses in their life, for dealing with people that they come across that are, and not necessarily in a customer service perspective, but just in life in general. If you go in the grocery store and you speak to someone and they snap your head off or they roll their eyes at you or whatever the case may be, can you give some tips for helping people to, you know, to do that? Like you said, don't take it personally. That's a great piece of advice.
That's a big one. And one of the other things we tell people to do is reframe what you're seeing in that person. So if somebody does something to you that's rude, or, you know, you're like you mentioned, you say I'm going to the grocery store and the cashier is just rude, and I can look at it and look at her and think, oh, what a rude woman, and just create all these judgments, or I can think, you know, she's probably having a bad day, or maybe the person ahead of me was mean to her, and that leaves me open to being kind to her and being compassionate to her if I'm not making harsh judgments about her. And it's it's hard to do, but you can actually practice it. It's just, you know, if somebody's really bossy, what if you looked at them as just being somebody who knew what they wanted and wasn't afraid to ask for it? Or somebody who was, you know, who was really direct and they know what they want. What if they're, you know, that's a gift to you because they're telling you exactly what they want from you. You don't have to guess, so you'll get it right. You know, so reframing is a really good technique for feeling better in those kinds of situations so that you can act from your, you know, your highest level of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then another one is to understand customer styles. Because there are four basic styles, and if you could recognize it, it takes the feeling you get in your stomach away. Because there are people who are chatty Cathys. They will talk, and they really just love the social life, and they want to talk about the fun things coming up in the baseball game and whatever's happening. And if that's their style, you can match their style and be friendly and allow them to talk because that's their style. But if you have somebody who's like, you know, my husband, who is direct, it's like, let me get in here, buy what I want, and get out. Get to the point and move on. Then you can say, okay, that's a direct style. I can get to the point and get on with them. So you kind of start adapting to their pattern if you start to recognize it. And that's another way to not take it personally. Oh, he's not being rude. He's being direct. Or, oh, she's not wasting my time. She's a social person. And social people have lots of friends, so let's be really friendly with her.
Right, right. And, you know, I have a scenario for you ladies. Now, this actually used to happen quite a bit when I was in corporate America. I happen to be one of those type of people that I am very, very respectful of other people's time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always punctual, and, you know, I always arrive at meetings on time. And for the people who are listening that are still in corporate America, it's actually twofold. My question is twofold. If someone calls a meeting and you get to the meeting at the time that they call the meeting, but they're not there, no one's there, you're the only one there. Now, this actually happened to me quite a few times. I was the only one there. The meeting starts at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, I'm there. 3:05, not there yet. 3:10, not there yet. How long should you wait before you leave and just give up?
That is a great question. There's
so
many variables.
It happens to me a lot.
Oh, there are so many variables, and I honestly, I'm one of those people that's usually about 5 minutes late.
Oh, really? I'm sorry.
No, it's perfect because I've had people tell me, Lori, it bothers me that you're 5 minutes late, and I'll sorry about that. And then I also have people that I meet with that they're always 5 minutes late too. So it doesn't bother me so much. But it's interesting that, you know, especially at the beginning of the meetings, you know, I know in business situations, a lot of times they'll be, you know, the big executive won't show up until 10 minutes after it was supposed to start. Or, You know, like you said, somebody won't show up until 3:15, and they're just a flurry of excuses.
Well, and it's usually the executive, because I was in high level, you know, management positions. So
right.
It's typically the executive that's a higher level, and he wants
right.
to wait until everyone else is there so he could just walk right in and start.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I advise is cutting them some slack, because the high level executives are often really busy people. And they may have somebody else scheduling them up against, you know, 15-minute increments. And if something comes up in the course of the day, oh, no, guess what? Their schedule's thrown off for the rest of the day. Or they might have gotten an emergency phone call or something like that. So personally, if it's a customer, I am always very, very patient. And I've taken that and turned that around. So if it's somebody making me wait that's a vendor, I apply that compassion and say, okay, something probably came up. You know, I'll give them 15 minutes, and then I'll call them on their cell phone.
And that was my question. How long should you wait?
I usually give them 15 minutes, and I'll call them on their cell phone. If I can't reach them on their cell and they're that late, I'll leave, but with no ill feelings or anything, just, okay, well, that was an unexpected, you know, waste of my time. But I had 15 minutes to sit in the restaurant or sit in the coffee shop and just kind of have some quiet time, which in my life is a valuable commodity. I don't get much
mm-hmm.
quiet time where I don't have to be doing something else. And just try to look at it as something that isn't necessarily a negative. You know, and sometimes what happens is that person, because they were late, will feel a little tiny slight feeling of obligation to you. And that can work in your favor as well.
Right.
So that's how I
right.
look at that personally.
And then the other thing I would add to that, because I agree with you completely, is that if it's a continuous meeting and they're continuously late and it goes on, you may have a high-level executives appreciate straight conversation saying, you know, I've noticed that you tend to be between 10 and 15 minutes late. Would it be okay if I came at 10 after? And, you know, just to get that squared. And then that gives you, if you're a very punctual person, which I tend to be, a little bit of leeway and relief. But I love what Lori said about giving yourself that empty space to just kind of decompress and meditate in your mind for a few minutes.
And I have I've noticed since I have been out, I've always been very structured, and, you know, my significant other tells me all the time, Kathy, you need to be a little bit more centered because, you know, you're so far to the left,
mm-hmm.
and most people are pretty far to the right. So you need to be somewhere in the middle. So because I'm one of those type of people, and I think that's one of the beliefs that I adopted from my mother. I allowed her to put that in me. But my mother was always 10 minutes early. And so I unfortunately became one of those people. I'm always early. So and then my significant other is always chronically late. So,
of course.
Well, and it's okay. It's okay because actually that has helped me to realize that I do need to be somewhere in the middle, because since I stepped out of corporate America and I'm now an entrepreneur, a lot of the people, clients and customers that I meet with, they're usually on the later side. Now, they're not really, really late, but I'd say they're about 5-10 minutes late, like you mentioned, Lori, you know, about 5-10 minutes late. And I'm okay with that. I am very okay with that. Now, if it's a little bit more than that, I would expect them to call and say, hey, I'm running late, and, you know, I'll be there in 20 minutes. And I'm okay with that, as long as I know what's going on. It's just sitting there not knowing what's going on that's
Now, there's a little research about being on time, though, and most millionaires come 10 minutes early is what I've heard the research.
I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah.
There you go. Looks like I'm on my way.
I'm going to use whatever I can to turn that habit around.
Oh, that's funny. I just think it's a time management thing. I really do. I think it's a time management. I think most people, they don't allow for traffic, and they don't allow for, you know, some of the things that – if you're supposed to be there at 3, they leave at 10 of, knowing that they're 20 minutes away from the location they're supposed to meet. So I just think it's a discipline and a time management.
But it's a good point that you're bringing up, because one of the companies that we interviewed was Preston Wynn Spa, and they've got these type A Masters of the Universe women with nice incomes but very little time coming in, and they'll be a half hour late for a massage and want the full time for their massage, and, well, even they're half hour late, they have a person behind them. how do you manage that? You know, there are too many people that get snippy and say, well, if you'd been here on time, you would have had your full time, but unfortunately you can't, you know, which that's like a dig and they're not going to come back. So that concept of compassion is really important playing in there. If they're late and you can accommodate them, great. If you can't, say, oh, I can understand how you feel. It's not easy to be on time when you have so much going on in your life. We can give you 45 minutes. Unfortunately, we have a person coming in. You know, so how you say it and the feeling you feel behind your words actually speaks louder than your words.
Right, right. And I've learned since I've been doing my my coaching business as an entrepreneur that you really do have to be flexible because there are so many different styles and there are so many different personalities and so many different people. Like you say in your book, you're Gladys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are different levels of Gladyses. I mean, there's some really severe Gladyses and there are some mild Gladyses and everything in between.
Mm-hmm. And then there's what we call the Oscars. Now, those are the ones that are asking you to do something maybe a little unethical or they're making it extremely difficult on your best people and making them miserable. Now, sometimes you do have to say goodbye to when the Gladys crosses over into becoming an Oscar. Then it's time to let them go.
Mm.
But there are extremes.
Now, when you say unethical, can you give me an example?
Well, for example, in corporate America, sometimes, you know, the way budgets are handled makes it challenging for people to get work done, and so they'll ask you to fudge your invoice. They'll ask you to make it look like you did this when in fact you did that.
That's
the kind of thing that can get you in trouble.
Yep, you're right. There's
or they're inappropriate with your staff, maybe inappropriate with your female staff. You know, things across the line.
Yeah, that's not only out in corporate America. That's in the business that I'm in too. So that's everywhere. There's just so much, and I tell my partner all the time that you know, corporate America was pretty structured, but since I've been out as an entrepreneur doing this type of work, it's just kind of all over the board. I mean, people are just, they don't respect your time, and you know, they don't have a lot of integrity and professionalism. And I mean, even like you said, sometimes they're a little unethical and with some of the stuff that they say and ask and expect of you. So it's a great learning experience.
Yeah, I liked what you said earlier about law of attraction, because I think when you continue to espouse integrity and quality in your work, and over time you attract like-minded and people that are like that, like you said, without integrity or can't show up on time and don't show respect for what you're doing, will bounce off. They'll come in and they'll go away, and you'll continue to attract those high-level, you know, people who have a similar level of integrity to what you're presenting. So it's a struggle, though, especially when you're dealing with, you know, individuals as opposed to companies. It can be harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that in some of the companies that we interviewed, one of in particular, they moved from $9 million a year to $250 million a year. And one of the things he attributes it to is the whole idea of like attracts like. So he has really great employees that love their job, have a passion for it, and do good work. And they like to work with other people like them. So he also found that poor performing employees like to work with other poor performing employees because they have a place to hide. So that's another thing.
And someone to complain to.
Exactly.
You got it.
Mhm. Yeah, complainers like to be around other complainers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to complain all the time, you don't want to be around somebody who is going to, you know, not complain and try to help you see the bright side of the situation. They don't want to hear it. I mean, you've heard that little joke about, oh, he's happy all the time. He gets on my nerves. He makes me sick.
Yes, I sure have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like happy
people. You're right.
Yeah, that's right. So
like-minded people want to be around like-minded people, right?
So especially if you're a business owner, then you've got a responsibility to be the guardian of your corporate culture and of your own, even if it's a culture of three employees, that you have that very clearly spelled out ethic of what it is you want to accomplish and how you want to do it. And then you tend to follow through and get people like that.
That's right. That is so true. I absolutely love what I do now. I mean, you know, even with the challenges, the benefits far outweigh the challenges and the Gladyses that I come across, and I just absolutely think it's fantastic. Now you two ladies wrote this book, so are you both coaches? I know, well, Marilyn, I know you're founder and president of Subtle Enterprises, LLC, and Lori Jo, you're a coach as well?
No, I actually, my day job, I guess you could say, I still have a day job in at a company. I manage a television production studio that has two locations in Metro Detroit. So we shoot, edit, do animation. And it's a veritable petri dish of customer service stories. It's wonderful. And I have a real passion for it, and it's very relationship-based, so that gives me my in-the-trenches customer service experience. And then Marilyn is a trainer. And Marilyn, why don't you tell a little bit more about what you do?
Yeah, I go into Fortune 500 companies, small companies, associations, and I do trainings. I do keynote presentations. And I dive in deep to the mindsets and help people learn and practice how to make things like this happen.
Excellent. Boy, we need lots of that. Mm-hmm. Lots of that. And what part of the country are you in, Marilyn?
I'm in Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Detroit? Yeah, we're both Lori and I, which has been, I think, the perfect time for this book to come out because Michigan's just going through so much transition right now. And we've been seeing the car companies, you know, going through, you know, having to borrow money from the government and just, you know, all the loss of jobs. And so the customer service is one thing you can do that doesn't cost a lot of money but makes all the difference in creating these long-term relationships that will last through regardless of what we're doing economically.
And one of the things that we found, too, Kathy, was that the companies that we talked to in our book that had great customer service, it doesn't mean that they're not affected by the economy, but they will be, they'll be the last ones to slow down and the first ones to pick back up. And that makes a huge difference in how they're able to get through the tough times. Yeah, customer service.
And don't you both think? I mean, I know this might be kind of a foolish question, but don't you both think that superior customer service it starts with having extremely high morale and happy, productive employees?
Oh gosh, yes, and that's what we call that internal customer service. So whatever is happening on the inside, you probably saw this wherever, you know, when you worked in corporate America, what happens on the inside eventually shows up on the outside. So poor communication inside, it's going to eventually catch up and your customers are going to be affected. If there's low morale inside, you're going to get sideways anger toward the customer. You see a little child and you smack them and say, don't hit people. You know, it doesn't work that way.
Right, which is one of the areas that I'm focusing on right now is the behavioral type of topics in corporate America and, you know, helping companies understand that I know the technical skills and, you know, teaching someone how to load an operating system on a computer or if you're in finance, teaching someone how to, you know, balance a budget or whatever. Those skills are important, but you also have to focus on the team-building skills and the communication skills, relationship-building, and those types of skills are extremely important because that's what keeps your morale up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And there's a chapter, one of the chapters in our book is about Preston Wynn Spa, and the entire chapter is focused on communicating with your employees and making sure they have what they need to do a good job and making sure that they're happy and that if there are issues, there's open communication. And that's a huge factor in customer service and repeat business, is how well you care for and, you know, and communicate with your staff.
Yeah, and one of the things I love
and ladies, believe it or not, we are coming down on our last 60 seconds. It's snubbing up on me here. Wow, I mean, the conversation was going so well, I just didn't realize we have 60 seconds remaining in our program. So let's give your website out. I'd like to give both your websites.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Who's Your Gladys is www.whosyourgladys, WHOSYOURGLADYS.com. You can get the first chapter of our book free just to get a preview of it, and there's lots of great downloads there.
Marilyn has a website. She's a speaker, and she does cover other topics besides customer service, and that website is www.marylynsuttle.com. That's MarylynSuttle.com.
Perfect. Fabulous. Ladies, thank you so much. I am so blessed to have you both in my campaign, and we are really going to have a good time on December 10th with this.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to thank you both for joining us this evening. You've been a wealth of knowledge, and we're going to sign off for now, and we'll see you next week. I am Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
Good night, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving.